On the 6th of July this year, a bill to decriminalise sex work passed the upper house. The bill put forward by Liberal MP Michelle Lensink focused on consensual sex work. However, coercion, detaining women against their will and children working in the industry are, of course, remaining illegal. And we're yet to see what happens when the bill gets through the lower house. Feminist insider Claire Totizo from the YWCA joins us now to tell us more about this one. How's it going, Claire?
Good morning, Jenny. I'm well.
And so what are the pros of decriminalising consensual sex work?
Well, look, this obviously seems like a controversial issue, but at the heart of it, really, it's about safeguarding the health, safety and workplace rights and human rights of sex workers in South Australia. And what it will mean is that sex workers, the majority of whom are actually women, would be able to report to the police abuse or exploitation without fear of themselves actually being criminalised. It means they can go to the Fair Work Ombudsman if they're being discriminated against. It means they can have access to, you know, basic rights that we all take for granted, even things like access to finance or, you know, Centrelink. And accessing healthcare without fear of being criminalised or being found out. And so, you know, I think this is really timely. South Australia has some of the apparently the most outdated or strictest laws in the country. And so it is definitely time for reform. And, you know, there's many, many health human rights experts, you know, really prominent bodies such as Amnesty International, lots of UN bodies, the World Health Organization, who all say that decriminalisation is actually the best way to ensure those, that, you know, the health and safety and human rights of sex workers.
Mm. Now, Mick Atkinson, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, he called me Alan Jones of the Left on Twitter.
Congratulations.
Because he was upset that I spoke to Tammy Franks on this one, because he thinks that I agree with her on the topic. And I have invited him for an interview and he hasn't responded yet. Mm. So yet to hear from him on that.
Interesting.
But why do you think people like himself and why do you think there is a little bit of pushback still from Parliament?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think obviously there are quite a few reasons, and it's okay to ask questions and it's okay to be concerned. But I think we've come to the point where, you know, there's a lot of... you know, the sex work industry isn't going away, and it is one of the oldest professions in the world. And there's lots of different models around the world. And what we know now is that decriminalisation is actually the best model. It tends to, I guess, equalise, level the playing field for all, you know, people who might be in that industry. You know, in Victoria and Queensland and some other states, that there's a legalisation model, and that all that does is create two industries where you've got one that people can, you know, create a licence, you know, apply for licences, but for those people who might be vulnerable or marginalised or not able to access things like that, they can't actually do that. Mm. So, you know, there's a few different models out there. The Nordic model, again, which criminalises the purchasing of sex rather than the selling of sex. But that also just works to force the industry underground. And so... I think we need to start looking at the debate in a rational way and really see this as a public health issue more than, you know, just a morality issue, because, you know, whether you like it or not, it is around, and we need to make sure that we keep people safe and women safe, particularly when we're talking about, you know, addressing violence against women in Australia. Well, this is one way we can actually help women feel safe.
Yeah. So we're yet to see what will happen when it does go through the lower house, so we'll have to watch this space.
That's right. So we're not sure exactly when it will happen, but certainly we hope that it will happen soon. And this is the furthest it's gone in 30 years. So we do hope that that it does go through.
Claire Totizo is with us. She's our feminist insider from the YWCA. For the first time in Australian political history, female GPs outnumber male GPs. And there are people outraged about it, of course.
That's right. Well, hopefully not too many, but it's just interesting because, yeah, the Medical Board of Australia confirmed that women now do outrank men in general practice.
Does that mean that we're going to have to start, you know, stereotyping doctors as women?
That's right. Well, hopefully, yeah. And so there's about 973 more registered female GPs in Australia than males. And that, you know, that basically equates to about 50.2%. So we just are a little bit more than men. But it's gone up from 47% in 2012 and 2013. So it certainly has increased. And look, it's a great thing, you know, to have that increased visibility of female doctors. But it, obviously it doesn't necessarily mean that there's more women than men generally in the medical field. But general practice I guess, tends to suit women more in terms of it being a little bit more flexible, but also, you know, there's less allegations of discrimination and sexism than there are in other medical professions such as surgery or intensive care. And we have, in fact, seen, you know, recent reports around the treatment of women in some of those areas. One report showed that female doctors were being asked about their plans to have children during job interviews, you know, talking about bullying and sexual harassment being ingrained in doctor training and other specialties. So, look, it's great to see that there are more women in the medical profession, but I think we also need to balance that out with what's happening in those other industries and how we can support women to be in those too.
Because there still is quite a large imbalance in terms of female underrepresentation in leadership roles.
Absolutely, and that's the other thing. You know, we need to make sure that it's not just women in the lower areas of those industries, and that's also how we see things like the gender pay gap coming about.
Claire Tatiso is with us. The UK Advertising Standards Authority are proposing new rules to eliminate sexist and stereotyping adverts. Tell us about this one. What kind of messages and themes are going to be banned?
That's right. So they say that they're going to toughen rules on ads that are deemed to present activities that might only seem appropriate for one gender, or ads that might mock those who don't conform to stereotypical gender roles. But it will also look at toughening ads that body shame women or that, you know, avert objectify or sexually objectify women, or also present them in an unrealistic way. So looking at banning ads that have, you know, obscene airbrushing, and they have actually done that already. And, you know, I think this is a great step forward. I think it's an important conversation we need to be having about, you know, the role that the media plays in influencing people and particularly children. And we know that, you know, advertising works, otherwise it wouldn't make so much money, and so we have to start thinking about the messages we're sending. And certainly, you know, they even said that, you know, they're not going to ban everything that might seem to be a little bit stereotypical, but look, but that, you know, they released a report that said that they do acknowledge that specific forms of gender stereotypes can actually contribute to harm for adults and children. It can limit how they see themselves and how they see others, and the decisions that they make. So they're looking to just address some of those harms that might be caused by those ads.
That's a tricky one. I don't know how I feel about it. I feel like that's important, but then at the same time, where do you draw the line? Who makes those calls? Do you know if it's going to be a body of representatives who figure it out?
Or? Yeah, I don't know they've gone that far yet. I mean, the report that was released, I guess, acknowledged that stereotypes can be harmful, and so perhaps they have a role to play in making sure that they're not sort of perpetuated through media messages. It is a tricky one because you certainly don't want to have a lot of censorship going on, and there may be sort of a subjective idea about what actually is okay and what isn't. But I would assume that they would have a sort of, set of rules that would apply to those ads, and maybe some objective perspectives on it as well. But it will be interesting to see. I think I'd be interested to see the Australian, you know, media authority looking at this as well, and particularly around you know, body shaming and that sort of thing, and maybe presenting women in unrealistic ways. And I think, you know, anything that can attempt to try and, I guess, increase diversity of everybody, diversity of representation in our media is probably a good thing.
Yeah. Hey, so thanks so much for joining us, Claire.
Thanks for having me.